Hi, everyone, and welcome to part two of The Unique Self and the Organizational Success, the Path of Organizational Transformation. This is the third part of the web series titled The Next Step in Transformation, Unique Self, Organizational Leadership, and the Destiny of Nations with Richard Barrett and Mark Gaffney. My name is Jessica Brown. I am the leader of Network Services and Development at Barrett Value Center, and I'll be facilitating today. And we also have Mr. Richard Barrett and Dr. Mark Gaffney on the call with us. Hi, Richard and Mark.
Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
Hi. So we're here together today in order for Richard and Mark to share their latest thinking and technology for transforming yourself, which is the first step of any kind of transformation, and to show how personal transformation, organizational transformation, and societal transformation are driven by the same core principles. So in this series, we are going to focus on organizational transformation. Last time we focused on personal transformation, and the next part of the series is on societal transformation. So today really emphasizes a few key points and questions, such as what is the corporate soul? How your unique self relates to the corporate soul? How the organization develops its own sense of unique self, how developing the unique self of the organization and liberating the corporate soul lead to improved performance, and what every leader needs to know about employee engagement, the unique self, and the corporate soul in order to understand the four conditions for whole systems change. So today will involve listening, experiential learning, discussion, and Q&A. First, we're going to hear from Mark and Richard, and then we will listen in on a conversation between Mark and Richard. And after that, we'll move into small group discussions and then come back to plenary space to have comments and question and answers with the whole group before closing. So before we get started with the agenda, I just want to cover some basic logistics. So for the call, we have you on mute, and this is because we'd like to create the best possible experience for everyone on the call so as to minimize distractions and distractive noises that come through the microphone. When we are at the point of opening the call for questions and comments, you will be able to raise your hand and we will unmute you and call on you. And all you have to do is press the number 1 on your telephone keypad or your Skype dial pad. And then we also encourage you during this time right now, as we're just getting into the call, to clear away any distractions you might have. So closing other windows on the computer, making sure your phone is off, because we find that we can have a much more meaningful conversation when everyone is present with the topic at hand. We also want to ask that you have pen and paper handy in case you want to take notes or in case you need it for the experiential exercise portion for the call today, so grab that if you don't have any right now. And then also, if you have any technical issues during the call today, feel free to use your chat message box on the participant dashboard, which the link to that was included in your reminder email where you received your dial-in number. Or if you don't have that up, you can press the number 5 on your telephone keypad and help will come your way. So first, I'm just going to quickly introduce Richard and Mark, and then I'll let them start beginning to introduce themselves. So Richard is an author, speaker, and social commentator on the evolution of human values in business and society. He's the founder and chairman of the Barrett Value Center and an internationally recognized thought leader on values, culture, leadership, and consciousness. And he's the author of books such as A Guide to Liberating Your Soul, Liberating the Corporate Soul, Building a Values-Driven Organization, The New Leadership Paradigm, Love, Fear, and the Destiny of Nations, and What My Soul Told Me, A Guide to Soul Activation. And Dr. Mark Gaffney, also on the call, is a philosopher, public intellectual, and wisdom teacher. He holds his doctorate in philosophy from Oxford University, rabbinic certification from the chief rabbinate in Israel, as well as rabbinic ordination. He holds a doctorate in religious science, and he's the initiating thought leader, together with Ken Wilber, of world spirituality based on integral principles, as well as the leading theorist and teacher of unique self-enlightenment. And his most recent book is Your Unique Self, The Radical Path to Personal Enlightenment, which received a 2012 USA Best Book Award. So welcome, Richard and Mark. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Jessica.
Yes, thank you, Jessica. So Mark and I agreed that I would kick off this conversation, and I want to start with the idea of the corporate soul. My second book, Liberating the Corporate Soul, came out in 1998, and that followed my first book, A Guide to Liberating Your Soul. And it was clear to me at that point in time that I was being guided to talk about how we get a grip on this idea of the soul, what it means, and how we can live from that place. So that's the journey I've been on for the past 15 years. And when I wrote What My Soul Told Me recently, which is a guide to soul activation, I realized that I'd come quite a long way in that journey. But I think the elusive part has been thinking about the soul of a group structure, like an organization or like a nation. And people ask me, well, what does it mean to liberate the corporate soul? And I think my answers to that question have varied quite a bit over time. But I think this is where I am right now. And I have to say, I'm still in that inquiry, and I'm looking forward to this discussion with Mark to see if we can dig a bit deeper and understand it a little bit better. I think the place where I've got to on this is that, you know, we're all energetic beings, and the energy being, or the energy part of who we are, is our soul, and that's the reality from, let's say, a higher dimension of reality. In the physical world, we think we are in these physical bodies, and our ego tries to keep us safe and protect us. And as I said, I think in the first seminar in this series, the role of the ego is to keep us alive so the soul can have this experience. Now, then that leads me to the unique self and the purpose of the soul, which is to live a values-driven life and a purpose-driven life. And it's pretty easy to relate to that as you understand what you're passionate about, and we did an exercise on that on the last session. Now, how does that relate to a group structure like an organization? I think an organization, a small organization, and let's just say like an organization like my own, which is about 20 people, the inspiration for the organization comes from the person who starts the organization, from the leader. And so in some ways, the soul of the organization is somehow linked to the soul of the person who is starting that organization. I remember Phil Clodier, who's the CEO of our organization, said to me a year ago in front of quite a number of staff, he said, you know, do you all realize that we're all working for Richard's soul? And that was a really clarifying statement to me, because I began to realize that the vision, the mission, the values, what we put together, not just myself, but with other people, but mostly coming from deeply from my own soul purpose, was the guidance of the organization, the guidance, the direction that the organization was going in. And then I started to think about some bigger organizations, and I thought about Hewlett-Packard, for example. You know, Hewlett and Packard were two gentlemen who had a really clear vision. They started in their They started small in a garage, and they built this huge company. And then after Hewlett and Packard died or left the company in the sense, I can't remember whether they died or left the company, I think they died, Hewlett Packard kind of lost its way, and I think it's because that energetic direction and purpose that was coming from the two founders somehow got diluted by other energetic influences from new leaders coming in, because everybody has a soul, everybody has an influence, is influenced by their soul. And sometimes I think that organizations will, the thrust of what it was the original founders wanted to do, the organization loses its way when they leave, because the sense of purpose, the sense of vision, the sense of mission and the values seem to disappear as the leader disappears. So I just want to start off with that statement and then hand that over now to Mark and say, well, what do you think about that, and how do you think the unique self relates to the soul of an organization?
That's thank you. Thank you. That's just such a wonderful beginning, Richard. And let's just try and kind of feel into this, you know, kind of step by step and kind of see where we go. You know, when you use the word soul, of course, you know, I, as you know, prefer the word unique self, just because, you know, unique self allows for someone who is not in a spirit framework, right, to kind of step into the conversation. Because unique self talks about irreducible perspective, the irreducible perspective, which works whether you're an atheist or whether you're kind of profoundly, you know, in spirit. Having said that, you know, I completely agree with the usage of the word soul. I want to just, you know, give another frame for it. When Richard, you know, I can talk about you in the third person for a second, Richard, and just say how delighted I am to be in this conversation with you and to be really having these really on-the-edge conversations that can really evolve our thought together and take us to the next step. So when Richard, when you talk about soul, you mean something close to what I would call also interiors. That's really what the word soul means, is that every event has not only an exterior, has not only a kind of flat surface, but there's an interior. So to the precise extent that anyone listening, for example, understands that love, the experience of love, is not reducible to the secretion of dopamine or serotonin, which accompanies the experience of love. So the secretion of dopamine and serotonin is the flatland exterior expression. However, we understand that the experience of love upon which many of us stake our lives, right, love, loyalty, commitment, integrity, right, those are interior experiences. So soul, right, means interior. There's an interior depth of experience. There's not only quantity, which is obviously measurable, there's also quality, which is accessible. And, you know, some of the key conversations I'm having with Richard is how can we actually measure, is there a way to measure using different barometers, right, to actually measure quality, right, in a similar way. So that's just kind of by way of introduction, kind of talking a little bit about, you know, soul and the work of unique self. And what we mean by that, everyone, is interior, right, the interior depths. You know, and number two, the interior depth always has perspective, irreducible perspective. So that's just in terms of a little bit of kind of just, you know, defining terms to enter the conversation. Now to kind of move directly in, Richard, you know, let's just kind of feel this out, right? Unique self. So we talked in our last conversation about the irreducible perspective, the irreducible interior of an individual, which is not repeatable, right? Which takes 13.7 billion years of evolution to produce, right? Which appears in the physical world, right? To the unique cellular signature of the human being, right, the biology, and really kind of begins, you know, really all the way down. You know, atoms actually have a kind of unique signature. So that uniqueness kind of emerges. You have this emergence of uniqueness, which begins in the cosmological level, right, the signature of atoms, right, the molecular signatures, and then uniqueness emerges into biology, and then uniqueness emerges as uniqueness awakens and becomes aware of itself in human beings. Human beings become aware of their uniqueness, first at a kind of lower level, right, at the level of survival. I'm unique, I have to protect my own survival, right, so uniqueness at the level of ego, But and then that uniqueness awakens, right, and it becomes an aware uniqueness. I'm consciously unique, right, not merely to protect my survival, but because actually my uniqueness implies that I have irreducible dignity, that I have actually gifts to give. I have a life to live and gifts to give and a song to sing and a poem to write and a way of being, laughing, loving, living that's uniquely mine, and that therefore it calls me. I'm called by that uniqueness, right? You know, Richard, in your language, my soul tells me something, right? I'm invited. Right? There's an invitation in that uniqueness. Uniqueness confers not only dignity, but not only rights, but responsibilities, right? Also the joy of responsibility. It's the invitation, right, to give the unique gift. So it seems like that really applies equally powerfully in the level of a group, right? That the notion that basically uniqueness, you know, ends with an individual would seem to be inappropriate. Just like there's the autobiography of an individual, the sacred autobiography of the individual, there's the sacred autobiography of the corporation. And one could actually write the autobiography of a corporation, right? The corporation's unique self, right? The unique expression, right, of that corporate self. And Richard, as you and I both know from other engagements, you know, the corporation has long used, you know, its corporate identity as a corporate veil, right, to protect itself, you know, from a legal standpoint. But now what we're talking about is taking that notion of a corporate identity, which is already, right, ensconced in the law, and turning it, right, and exposing its deeply profound interior positive dimension, which is it's not just a protection, it's not just a corporate veil, but it actually has interior depth. And when a corporation loses touch with its unique self, right, with its unique identity, with its unique configuration, as in the Hewlett-Packard case, right, that you talked about, and the corporation kind of loses its way. And you can actually feel, you can get a sense of the distinction. You know, Exxon doesn't have an obvious unique self. Whole Foods has a rather obvious unique self. The Container Store, you know, other people that we've talked to, right, have a clear, you know, purpose that you can feel. So what is the unique self of a corporation? So the unique self of a corporation would seem to be drawn, right, by a number of factors. The first might be, what are its core values? What are the core values, right, that the organization serves? And those core values are never merely profit. And it's never merely, right, we want to make money, right? Now, making money, right, is a beautiful and sacred endeavor, right, when, right, the creation of prosperity comes from voluntary exchange. You know, the creation of profit through voluntary exchange is, as you and I both know, has lifted more people out of poverty in the last 200 years than all the great religious traditions together. And you and I both love in different ways the religious traditions and all that they offer, right? And, of course, we understand the limitations and we understand what we need to evolve beyond. But, you know, this notion of voluntary exchange to create prosperity, which we call business, right, what our friend John Mackey likes to call conscious capitalism, right, is this gorgeous and noble pursuit. You know, having said that, it's a noble pursuit when, right, the creation of prosperity, right, is the natural byproduct of fulfilling the core values and the unique purpose of the organization. And the unique purpose of the organization, when it's articulated in a clear way, when it moves from unconscious to conscious, right, when it awakens to itself, when the original founder's vision is internalized by the people who join later and then evolved, right, together, right, in this collective way, then it becomes an animating eros, an animating force in the corporation, which always calls the corporation forward. It becomes a strange attractor. Right? When the initiating energy of the organization is recognized and evolved and made articulate.
Can I just jump in there, Mark,
please,
and just say one thing that I when you talk about unique self and the gift that each unique self has, what it seems to me is that happens is that when people resonate with the vision, the mission, and the values of the organization, when I say people, I mean employees, they bring their gift, the gift of their own unique self, to that organization. And
that's great. That's great.
And what happens then is that you've got an expansion of that energetic field with that purpose, that vision, and those values, because people are contributing their gifts to that very purpose. And that, for me, is what employee engagement is about, and that, for me, is what makes a really successful organization. End of comment.
Thank you. That's wonderful. That's so wonderful, because what you're really pointing to is, and you know, I'm going to just try and just unpack a little bit of what you said, and you'll tell me if I took it in the direction you intended or will amend appropriately. As long as an employee is in an organization where the organization doesn't meet them in their unique expression of purpose in the world, then they'll give the organization what they will for the sake of survival. But we all know, you know, that the average employee who's working for the sake of survival, that is, who's not identified with the unique purpose of the organization, because the organization hasn't articulated it or hasn't invited the employee to co-create its evolution and to participate in it, but the average employee works 3.5 hours out of an 8-hour day. And that's shocking. And looks for the next opportunity, right, to make slightly, you know, more money, right, and there's an enormous turnover rate. So the actual cost to the organization, right, is enormous, and during those 3.5 hours, you can rest assured that you're not going to get the best creativity, the best contribution, right, the best presence, right, the best service, right, the best functioning from that employee. So actually, right, to not create what you call in a number of your works and really measure beautifully, right, employee engagement, right, is actually disastrous for the employee on every possible level. However, as you, I think, so correctly point out, right, essentially the unique self of the organization, when it's articulated, when it's conscious, right, when we've moved from unconscious uniqueness, which exists all the way up and all the way down, atoms, right, all biological expressions are all unique. The human being is unique, right, even when the human beings, you know, 40,000 years ago and still kind of wandering around caves in the sub-Sahara. But the evolution of consciousness, right, is the evolution of uniqueness. We become more and more conscious of our uniqueness, not merely as our egoic nature, but as, right, the unique expression, right, of the intelligence of the cosmos, and if I can add, of the love intelligence of the cosmos, right, that moves in us, as us, and through us. And then when the unique organization calls us, we identify with its purpose, what happens is, it's almost, if I can borrow a word, Richard, it's almost psychoactive. And then our unique self is activated. Right, we're opened, we're drawn by that strange attractor, and then we bring our creativity to the table, and then there's this merging, right, this natural seamless meshwork, right, of the evolutionary creativity which is inherent in the initial vision of the organization, which we then participate and co-evolve, right, we co-create, right, in other words, we don't just procreate, we co-create, right, we create the next level of it together, and we're fully animated. We're working not only 3.5 hours a day, we're working easily 8 hours a day, probably more, and during that time, bringing our full creativity, we're more likely to stay with the organization, we're more likely to advance within the organization, right, and to infuse, right, our purpose meets the organization's purpose, our passion meets the organization's need, right, and there's this kind of gorgeous dance between the individual, right, and the organization, between autonomy and communion, and this new level of consciousness, right, is created. And that's the unique self of the organization, which is purpose-driven, which is values-driven. So let me just end here and pass it back to you. So please go ahead. Let me just one more sentence. Is that okay? If I can just kind of then I'll pass it back. So when the purpose-driven individual and the values-driven individual, right, are awakened, right, and they meet the purpose-driven organization, the values-driven organization, something new is created, and both catalyze each other, right? Both bring each other, both attract each other to higher and higher levels, right, of consciousness and therefore effectiveness. Does that resonate, Richard?
Absolutely, and I want to add to that. I want to say that the opportunity that a soul-driven or an organization that is fully expressing its unique self, the opportunity that brings, it becomes an attractor for soul activation of everybody in the organization. It gives the possibility of soul activation, because how many people, thousands, millions of people are in jobs where they don't feel that their soul is activated. They, as you rightly point out, they go to work to satisfy their deficiency need. It might not just be money, it might be, you know, comrades and having a nice chat in the tea room or whatever. And it could be just to, you know, feel good and look good, to massage their self-esteem. But when you have a values-driven, purpose-driven organization that is good for everyone, I mean, good for employees, good for society, good for even for investors, that is an opportunity to increase the amount of soul activation going on amongst the employee population. What an amazing opportunity that is when a leader can create that type of environment. And it becomes a sacred space. It becomes a sacred way forward. I hesitate to say this in front of a whole bunch of people, but I've always felt in my own way that our little company, the Barrett Value Center, was divinely guided. And in a sense, that divine guidance is simply, I think, the expression of a unique self. And because of that expression, it attracts other unique selves to bring their gifts. And there, I want to hand it back to you, because you have this lovely idea of everybody's gift being a piece in a jigsaw puzzle. And I think when we're able to activate, when create a good structure that activates the souls of people, everybody brings their gift, and each gift is a piece of the jigsaw puzzle for that particular unique self of the organization. What do you think about that, Mark?
That's wonderful, and you know, when you say divinely guided, you know, I wanna just kind of double click on that, and then kind of offer an image or two images. You know, when Richard says, and I'm talking about you in the third person for a moment, with your permission, Richard, when Richard says divinely guided, he doesn't mean that, you know, he was walking down the street, you know, and then he heard, you know, he saw an apparition in front of him which said, "Richard, Asheville is the place to start your organization, right? And right, I will reward you with $5 million, right?" Now, it's not that kind of primitive, you know, kind of apparition that kind of appears, although, you know, could happen on a good day. But what it means is that there's a deeply interior sense of feeling called, of feeling animated by that call, right? And being able to kind of begin to feel that reality is intimate with you. And that's a very beautiful idea. The reality is intimate with you means, right, that actually reality is calling. There's a conversation going on. And if you listen deeply, you can hear that conversation, and that conversation addresses you particularly. So that's a very beautiful, and kind of, you got to step into that conversation to be able to hear it. And however you interpret it, there's this deep sense of call, and every, you know, major, you know, innovation, and in every major organization, it is guided by people who felt in some way called in this direction. And the more the call becomes conscious, right, the more animated the organization is, and the more sustainable the organization is, right? The more it moves, if the organization is moved by kind of just the egoic thrust of the founder, right, then ultimately it's not going to be sustainable. But if it's called by a vision, right, and that vision has purpose and it has direction, and it's making a genuine, unique value contribution, then it's not just going to be a kind of 10-year run, that it's going to, or a 20-year run, it's going to be sustainable over 100 years or 150 years and create depth, right, in a very real way. And I want to give an example of what we mean by the unique self of a corporation, how that can make a difference, because I can also hear, Richard, the cynical voices, you know what I mean, kind of saying, what are they talking about, you know? You know, a company starts, it's trying to make a profit, that's its goal, you know, the old Milton Friedman, you know, the only obligation of a company is to its shareholders, you know, and it's, you know, obviously in a pre-stakeholder model world, and, you know, our colleague John Mackey had a really exciting and good conversation debating Milton Friedman about the stakeholder-shareholder model, but let's bracket that for a second. You know, what do we mean when we talk about the unique self of organization, of an organization? I want to give a very simple example. When you have someone for dinner, invite someone for dinner, right? Richard is having people for dinner. So why are you having people for dinner? You're having friends for dinner, or you're entertaining. So partially you're having them for dinner in order to feed them. You know, you want to feed them. You know, so you're going to have dinner, you're going to cook a meal. But that's not really why you're having them for dinner. You're having them for dinner to create contact, right, to have a conversation, right, to create an atmosphere of exchange, right, to promote friendship, right, to promote solidarity, right, to invite people to, and yourself, right, to move beyond social isolation, right, into genuine community with other people. So let's take a company which is, you know, making food, making dinner for people. So you can make dinner for people in one of two ways. You can make dinner for people where your job is, right, I want to kind of spend the least on the dinner that I'm producing, make the most, right, the American view of a great deal, right? You give, right, the least and get the most, right? And then you go to that place and you feel that. This place is trying to, you know, give me, you know, the least and get the most for me, and they're not holding me. Or you can go to a company, let's say Chick-fil-A, right, in the South, which is one of the most successful concerns, business concerns in the southern United States, right, where they have a notion that every single person who comes to Chick-fil-A for dinner is coming to make human contact. And part of the purpose of their company is to create a place in which people meet each other, and they ask each other their name, right, and, you know, they share a little bit, and they feel welcomed and received, right, and the Chick-fil-A employees really go through a very beautiful process of up-leveling of consciousness, right, and training, right, to actually really welcome people into Chick-fil-A. And when you look at the Chick-fil-A training video, in their training video, they've got this wonderful thing where they have, you know, little bubbles which tell a little bit of the story of each person, right, who's in the Chick-fil-A, you know, restaurant, you know, the fast food chain, you know, both the employees, right, and the customers. And of course, what they're saying to their employees, right, is that everyone here has got a story. And they're not just functions, and they're not just people. Right? And then the people that come to Chick-fil-A naturally begin to ask the Chick-fil-A employees, hey, what's your name? And of course, a natural, spontaneous, unique self-practice. Don't receive service from a person whose name you don't know. And don't offer service to a person whose name you don't know. And all of a sudden, Chick-fil-A becomes literally the most exciting place to get fast food in the South. Right? And I have many, many friends who live in the South, who tell me that their kids ask them, let's go to Chick-fil-A. And the parents say, well, why do you want to go to Chick-fil-A? Well, we just love being there. Now, it happens to have, right, an ancillary result in terms of profits. Chick-fil-A is enormously successful, has an enormous amount of foundations, which are spin-offs from its success. But the core of Chick-fil-A is obviously great food and obviously good suppliers. That's all part of the story. But the deeper core is they actually have a genuine lived purpose. We want to have you over for dinner tonight. We want to give you a full experience, right? And all of that, Richard, so fascinating, and I turn it back to you, right? All of that is, I want to talk about the puzzle piece, but I don't want to talk for that long in a row, but just, we'll come back to the puzzle piece, but all of that is free. That's the funny thing. And that Chick-fil-A didn't have to spend any more funds to have a purpose, right? It actually animates their essence, and it's actually what's most valuable about them, and paradoxically, right, translates as a natural byproduct into unbelievably significant profits. So does that example resonate with you? It's kind of an example.
Oh, absolutely. I've got so much to say about that. Because when I think of the seven levels model, and I think of level six, which is the level of collaboration, it's the level after which level five, where you build that internal cohesion and the unique self begins to appear. The next level is then to bring into relationship that unique self with the other people who interface with the organization, the customers, other partner suppliers, the local community, etc. And it is, and I think that's what, you know, one of the interesting things in conscious capitalism, it's about how do we treat all our stakeholders equally, or let me put it another way, how do we take care of the concerns of all of our stakeholders? And I know, and even in our own little organization, as we've been moving forward, we've got to a point where the unique self of the organization is well established at level five, and over the past 2 years, we've been paying attention to collaborating with all of those people who touch our organization, which are partner trainers who train people, the users of our tools, and the end users of our tools. And we've been inviting people to into dialogue with us, inviting them into that conversation, which says, well, look, you know, here we are, we've got this precious gift of this, these tools and their ability to bring transformation. How do you relate to them, and how can you see ways in which we can improve that and build it? And what that does is it builds this sense of connected, energetic connectedness, where everyone is feeling, wow, I'm part of that conversation, I'm part of that success. And I think this is absolutely the way forward. Level 6 consciousness, collaboration with all stakeholders. Yeah, I'll just hand back to you there, Mark. I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So let's play off of that just for a second, right? Because you've introduced, of course, the stakeholder model, which is, you know, something that you talk about in your work extensively. I refer to it only briefly in Unique Self, and hopefully in our shared work we'll be able to unpack it more deeply. But just to kind of restate it for people not familiar for a second, and then tie it into the conversation. You know, the question is, what is the purpose, right, of a company, of a corporation? Does it serve the profits of the shareholders, which is then what drives the company, right, A, or does it essentially serve all the stakeholders in the company? Now, you might think that the notion that it serves all the stakeholders would therefore oppose profits, because after all, you're trying to take into account all the stakeholders that include the suppliers and the children of the suppliers and the environment, you know, and the town that the suppliers may live in, you know, and the obviously the employees, right, you know, and the customers. But these are all actually stakeholders. And if it only serves the shareholders, then basically it's what Buber would call an I-it relationship. It's everyone's used in an I-it relationship in order to ultimately serve, right, the group of shareholders. And of course, everyone experiences, right, when they're in an I-it relationship, and even if the people are pretending like it's not. The other model is an I-thou relationship, using Buber's term, meaning everyone involved in this whole circle of stakeholders has an interior, has depth, right, has irreducibly unique dignity, and therefore everyone is honored, and therefore everyone needs to rise together, everyone's brought to the table. And of course, the difference to these two models is enormous, and paradoxically, it's actually the second model, right, the stakeholder model, which, based on very, very carefully done studies by colleagues of Richard's and mine, actually produces more profits. Because, again, you're inviting and honoring the interior depth, right, the soul, if you will, the irreducible uniqueness of the stakeholders, which then the stakeholders respond, right, by engaging, right, in a thousand different ways and creating creativity, right, innovation, right, which saves money, which creates new opportunity, which creates new spaces of insight, which evolves the process together. So you create a kind of virtuous circle of dynamic creativity and let me introduce a new word, of love. Right? And love means the desire to bracket my own ego to serve the evolution, to serve another. Meaning I bracket my own greed to serve your need, and paradoxically, my own prosperity, right, emerges from it. And that's the image of a puzzle piece. That's the unique self-image, that actually there's a large puzzle, and there are unique pieces of the puzzle, and all the stakeholders are unique selves, or unique pieces of the puzzle, and together they create the most productive, dynamic, creative, evolutionary we space that they possibly could. I mean, and that's just an incredibly exciting model, and I think, Richard, we're just at the cusp. We're just at the cusp, and as I think, you know, you and myself and, you know, a few other people are really just beginning to talk about the unique self of a business, right, in its positive dimension, and actually realizing that this is an organism that has an identity, right, that has subtle depth, right, that has, you know, that has evolutionary possibility. And maybe just one last sentence and toss it back to you. When you talked about the Barrett Value Center and the, you know, the sense of kind of, you know, serving this vision, right? So in other words, so you come, Richard Barrett comes, and you start, you know, the Barrett Value Center, much like, you know, I founded our think tank, you know, initiated together with Ken as a thought leader, Ken Wilber, right, the Center for World Spirituality. So it begins with that vision. And that vision, you know, that I bring or that you bring to the table is, of course, influenced by, you know, so many friends and so many colleagues, but we're expressing that uniquely. And what happens is that attracts people who are attracted to that vision, and then they bring something unique to the table. They bring their unique creativity. And then as uniqueness brings uniqueness, right, gradually something emerges, something evolves together. And there's a genuine coevolution. So, you know, what the Center for World Spirituality is now, like, is different, right, than it was, let's say, you know, several years ago when it started, because of the unique selves, like, who have come to the table, like, have actually brought their uniqueness to the table, and it's evolved. So there's a genuine process of evolution, but it's an organic process. It's not about coming in and taking over. It's not about coming in and changing the structure. It's about the person who's attracted, right, to this vision, is attracted to the unique vision of Center for World Spirituality, but then they naturally then evolve the process. So it's an evolving unique self. It's not a static, fixed metaphysical concept, but it's the recognition, right, that it's actually a living organism, right, that is evolving, right, is growing and changing, but it grows and changes within, right, the integrity of the trajectory of uniqueness, right, that conceived it. So that's kind of just to kind of flesh out the model a little bit. And the model matters. The model is, yeah, please.
I just want to add to that because I want to speak from my own experience. And, you know, I started the company. I was there through the tough bits and the good bits up to about age 8 when I began to recognize that it was important to stand back. And it was at that point, around year 8 or year 9 of the organization, that Phil stepped in as CEO. And as I stepped back, what was so amazing to me is that it created an opening for the expression of everybody's unique self. It created an opening for people to bring their gifts, like the people who organized this call and made it happen, Jessica and Hannah. So they stepped into that space, and there was a space now for them to bring their unique gifts and their energy into that unique self of the organization, which expanded, in a sense, its uniqueness. And so my point here is, I think there's a really critical point in the evolution of a company where the originator of the idea, of the thought, of that particular unique contribution has to step back in order to allow this thing which came out of the essence of that person to have its own life, which is the contribution of all of these unique gifts from these unique souls who are part of it. And these days I just sit back and write my books and think, and of course I do interact with people in the organization and people outside of the organization. But the organization grows amazingly, in amazing ways, and does amazing things that I would never even have thought of. And it's because of this. All of these people have the space to bring their unique gift. At least I think that's what I'm seeing. And I think it goes along with what you're saying, too.
Yeah, I think that makes that, please.
No, I don't want you to plan your retirement just yet, Mark, from the Center for Spirituality. But all I'm saying is that will come a point in time where standing back actually gives the unique self of the organization the space to become even more expansive and abundant and alive.
Yeah, no. That's wonderful, and I think it feels wholly resonant and accurate. And maybe we can just drill down for a second the mechanism, because this is not just you know, beloved and friends who are listening, and Richard's friends and community. This is not poetics. There's actually precise mechanisms at play here, and I want to try and identify them because I think that's critical. If I come to an organization in order to fulfill my own egoic needs, and by egoic I don't mean anything negative. Egoic, I mean the basic needs for survival, right? You know, the first, three levels in Maslow's hierarchy, the first levels in the kind of Barrett Index. I come to fulfill my needs for survival, a legitimate and important need, for belonging, right, in some sense or another, right, for self-esteem, right? You know, the kind of the list of core deficiency needs. That's a legitimate and good thing to do. Like, we all need to fill those needs, and as Maslow points out, unless you fill those needs, you can't actually evolve your consciousness to the next higher level needs. Having said that, if that's the only reason I'm attracted to the company, and I'm still in my separate self, my ego structure, and as long as I'm in my separate self, my ego structure, right, I'm still in an absolutely self-centered, narrow sense mode of seeking more and more control, seeking to kind of stand out by kind of pushing myself forward. You know, I'm still grasping, but I'm still, right, it's still an either-or proposition. Either I'll advance or that person will advance. But it's coming from, you know, the ego, and the ego is beautiful as a self-organizing principle of the self, but it has a downside, which is it's a contraction. It contracts, right? It's by its nature parasitic, but it seeks merely to perpetuate itself, and it uses everything around it for its own perpetuation, which at one level is healthy, but when that becomes the only dimension of the self, it becomes, you know, ultimately pathological, right? And ultimately, right, when it ignores the larger context, right, when it kind of propagates itself out of the larger context, it becomes, you know, tragically cancerous, right? Cancer is, right, a cell that metastasizes, ignoring the larger context. But when I come to a company and I celebrate, right, I come from, I'm attracted by the unique self of the corporation. That's the key. That's the strange attractor. I'm attracted to the articulated unique vision of the corporation. Then I come, my unique self is activated. So the first process is, the first structural dynamic is that unique selves appreciate each other. When I'm in my unique self, I meet Richard Barrett. I don't say, you know, why didn't I start the Barrett Value Center? But that's kind of really, like, really? Like, I can't believe he started, I mean, and you can feel like kind of the meanness in it, kind of in my voice, right? Like, I can't believe that he started that. And I have this internal voice that says, you know what, let me collaborate with him, see what I can get out of it. You know, perhaps I can kind of advance some things a little bit. And I've got this annoyance, like, I should have started something like that. You know, it's not exactly conscious, but there's, and you can feel it in the relationship. But if I'm in my unique self, and my unique self is, you know, I do this thing called the Center for World Spirituality, and I write from a completely different perspective, and I meet Rich, and I say, wow, he's got this entire world of thought that he's developed that overlaps so many things I've thought about in a completely different way that are reflective of his uniqueness, right? I fall in love with him. I say, oh, my God, that, not in the romantic sense, but I fall in love. We've limited love to romance, right? But love actually is the force of allurement, right? The force of attraction, of recognition, right? Of mutuality. I'm excited. And then Richard feels, wow, this guy's really excited. Then he'll kind of says, well, maybe I should look at his book. And he gets excited. And you create this virtuous circle, which then becomes creative and collaborative in a genuine way. Because unique selves, paradoxically, coming from the depths of their uniqueness, genuinely appreciate each other. They celebrate each other. Uniqueness celebrates uniqueness because uniqueness recognizes I'm a puzzle piece, but I'm not the puzzle. Right? And therefore, I need other puzzle pieces. Right, and it's a natural internal dynamic. And when that happens, then you can create the next step of creativity. And then when someone, right, steps into the unique structure, let's say at the Barrett Value Center, just we're using that as our example, and they bring their uniqueness, right, there's a celebration, right, there's a welcoming, and then creativity is unleashed. And that's the key. I mean, the single most valuable, you know, asset, if you will, of any, you know, company is the individual creativity, right, of the employees, of the stakeholders that are serving the larger vision. And the only thing that unleashes creativity is unique self, because what creativity is, creativity emerges from the unique avant-garde insight, right, of a person who's committed, right, to the overall vision, who brings their uniqueness. That's the very definition of creativity. So this is, I just want to, you know, I'll end this and toss it back to you, Richard, that this is not merely poetics, although when structural ideas are really exciting, they have a poetic sense to it, but there are very real structural realities here that are at play that actually mutually co-activate, right, the emergence, right, of the company. And the starting point is, right, is the unique self, the articulated unique self, right, soul, right, of the company, corporation, that then attracts unique selves. That's the kind of beginning of the story. So therefore, the articulation of core values, core purpose, right, and the articulation of a conscious unique self, not an unconscious unique self, actually is the single most important investment that a company can make from a certain perspective.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I'm actually going to jump in really quick. This is Jessica.
Please.
I'm really enjoying this conversation, and want to move towards the exercise experiential part in the next minute or so. So if you guys wouldn't mind heading in that direction.
Maybe Richard will wrap for us.
Yeah. 2 minutes about something that we didn't talk about, which was the what I would call the four conditions for whole system change, which brings us really to actually the four conditions for uniqueness. I just thought of that. Man, this is not a whole conversation here, Mark. The four conditions for uniqueness. You know, when you take the integral model and you take the top left and top right and you say, that's personal alignment. That's the personal alignment of the leaders, the authenticity of the leaders getting in touch with their unique self. And the same horizontal connection of the internal of the collective and the external of the collective is really the what we call structural alignment. It's the values and the vision and the mission totally embedded in every system, process, and structure inside the organization. And then the other two conditions for whole system change or uniqueness, I think, is values alignment. That's the link between the internal of the individual and the collective. And the values alignment there, the values of the individual and the values of the collective, and the mission alignment, the sense of being able to contribute my unique gift, because there is an alignment between who I am and the vision and purpose of the organization. So this seems to me to be encapsulating what we've been talking about, and I think we should have another whole conversation about that.
I think that's right. And Jessica, I apologize. I'm just gonna jump in for 1 second and then jump back out. It's funny that we're an hour in and we're just getting to that piece. So we need to have a whole, and maybe we'll have it in the third conversation. We'll begin here. Let me just throw one more thing, just kind of as it were on the record, everyone, and then we're gonna go directly with Jessica into the exercise, just so we have this at play and we have it in the transcript and it's part of the conversation. Just so I'm gonna just kinda dump this in as Richard just dumped in this very, very critical four conditions for kind of whole organization emergence, which is there really is, Richard, a deep analogy between, you know, because we talked in our first conversation about the individual, now we're talking about the company, and actually in some real sense, I'll just do this again in 90 seconds, they're very parallel. I mean, an individual begins with pre-personal, right, and then step one. Step two is then the personal, the ego self, the separate self emerges, right, step two. Then, you know, step three is the ego self, the personal self gets criticized in some way, right? And so, you know, you kind of go, let's say, in an enlightenment system, say, no self, go to no self, because it's too selfish, right? You know, or kind of, you know, become part of a broader community. But in other words, there's a critique, right? You know, there's a critique level three, and then level four, kind of a healthy sense of individuality, unique self emerges, right? And so the level three critique, let's say, of the individual would be kind of classical enlightenment, which says, you're so greedy as a separate self, you know, go to this kind of no-self place. But that, of course, leaves the person, you know, unsatisfied, a kind of classical Buddhist no-self. So then you have to realize, no, I've got to move beyond no-self to unique self, which both takes my uniqueness into account, but in this larger context, uniqueness that emerges after, but I've realized that I'm part of the larger context, after I've realized that I'm part of this larger picture. And the corporation is the same thing. There's a pre-personal corporation, you know, in the 1200s, where the corporation didn't exist. It just served the state. Then, you know, the ego of the corporation emerges. You know, Adam Smith, the True Wealth of Nations. The corporation just functions, you know, right, to serve itself. And then level three, it gets critiqued, you know, socialism. And then level four, unique self of a corporation emerges, just like the unique self of a person does. So if you put your whole system's vision together with this structure analogy between the ego, right, you know, the ego and the unique self of a person and a corporation, you know, we really have putting those two pieces together, right, a whole next stage vision for where we might be going, and that's just so exciting. So, Jessica, thank you for allowing us both to do that, and over to you.
Yeah, well, I actually just want to invite you, Mark or Richard, to start introducing the exercise now, and then we will move into pairs. So why don't we first, Mark or Richard, which one of you would like to introduce the exercise?
And Mark is going to do that.
Okay. Okay. Either way is totally good. So this is an exercise that Richard and I created together, and it's about, you know, kind of the exercise for unique organization. It parallels the unique self index that we did on the first call, and I'd invite everyone to just take a piece of paper and make a little line at the top of the piece of paper with five columns. And the exercise is very simple, but it's very elegant. So one, there's five questions, and you just need to write, you know, two words for each question so you have it. And then maybe try and write one and two in each column, you know, the first and second answer to the question. So in the first column, right, is what's the unique talent of your organization? What's your organization's kind of unique talent, right? Question one, it's unique talent or it's unique skill, okay? One. Two, what are your organization's unique values? Number two, what are your organization's unique values? Three, what is the unique need that your organization can address in the world? And you'll notice that each one of these questions overlaps the other, but it's a different door. So all the questions together give you a very full picture. What's the unique need? Number three, unique need that your organization can address in the world. Number four, what is your organization's unique need? Because what's the unique need of the organization that's addressed by its existence? What are we trying to address? And that might be, you know, that might begin with the unique need of the founders, but now what are the employees? What do we need? What are we addressing here? And finally, number five, how does your unique talent, and it's you as an individual, how does your unique talent, right, and your unique need as an individual, both. So the fifth question is, as an individual, how does your unique talent and your unique need, what you need as an individual, align with your organization's unique talent and your organization's unique need? Did everyone get that? So that's the fifth question. How does your unique talent and your unique need align with your organization's unique talent and unique need? And this very, very simple inventory actually is really kind of revelatory. It kind of gives you like, ah. And just by going through the process of actually engaging it, we found that just, you know, it really kind of reveals a lot. So that's the invitation. And take it away, Jessica. We'll go into small groups now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back from your discussion. Hope that went well. In a second, we're going to move into sharing and unpacking that experience. So I'm going to hand that over to Mark. And when you would like to share something, I just want to remind you to press number 1 on your telephone keypad. That's like raising your hand. So we'll move into sharing as a group now. We're all back together in the room as a group. So Mark.
Okay. Thanks, Jessica. Thanks. And, you know, we have about 10, 15 minutes left on the call. So we're going to close in about 15 minutes. So it would just be lovely to hear from, you know, from one of two things, from anyone on the call. You know, one is, you need to share what you did in your exercise, you know, and as I hope that you looked at the unique self of what your organization might be, you know, from that perspective, or just to share generally about, you know, your thoughts about the unique self of an organization. And, you know, you can press, how do you do it, Jessica? You press 1 to raise your hand?
Correct. You press the number 1.
Press the number 1 to raise your hand. And since I see a few people I know here, so how about Eric? Eric, how you doing, Eric? Is everyone back? Everyone back in the main room, Josh? It looks like people are still in their groups.
Oh, everyone's back. And I see Eric is unmuted now. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
I'm good. Two of my favorite people together.
Awesome. What do you think about the unique self of an organization? What are your thoughts, my friend, and your experience?
I think it's a really great idea. And what I was struck by is, you know, the comments on the leadership or the leader's ego based, as Richard said, are they able to step back and let the unique selves of their employees carry forward the mission and vision? And then, you know, I think this is more on your work, Mark, that so many corporations are really focused on the sub-personalities or the ego sub-personalities of people like, you know, the rebel, Harley Davidson, So I was thinking about, you know, what organizations are really appealing to developing the soul of their customers or their clients. That's what's sort of sitting with me.
Yeah. And you know, Richard and I are in an internal debate over the word soul or unique self, even though they both point to the same thing. We're going to try and figure out which one would you use? Which one you think is more effective, you know, in a company? What are the advantages and disadvantages? I'm kind of just curious about that because we're banding it between us.
Well, I just finished your book about 2 weeks ago, so I'm using unique self.
neither of us are identified with either side. I wrote a book called Soul Prince, and so this is not a personal Richard Mark thing. We're both kind of looking at it from a kind of bigger perspective. What's the best way to enter, you know, and kind of engage? But I'm glad you finished the book, and I know you've read Richard's books extensively. And you're actually a consultant using Richard's method, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's great.
I love Richard's stuff.
Fantastic.
Here's the difference for me for soul and unique self. Soul has a history of association with religion that unique self does not. And it's like spirit. You use the word spirit with somebody and they're just gone. They're not going to be there anymore. I mean, I love the word soul. But in speaking to people now, I talk about unique self.
Got it. Okay, good. That's helpful feedback. And thank you for everything. It's delightful to hear from you. Good. Thank you.
Yes, thanks.
And Richard, you'll jump in at any time and take us in any other direction. But I'm just going to kind of randomly, you know, invite everyone to either raise their hand or we'll just kind of invite people to kind of share. And of course, Jessica, Hannah, we'd be delighted to hear from you. Can I just kind of randomly kind of call on someone, just kind of what are your thoughts or feelings? So I'm turning to Kenneth. Kenneth, is that okay? That I just kind of, you know, call you out and invite you to share anything that might be on your mind?
Hello?
Hello, Kenneth.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
So what are you thinking, sir?
I'm not sure. Could you give me some directions and maybe I can?
How does, in your experience, you know, have you worked in a company which you felt had a unique self, a company that you felt didn't have a unique self? You know, does the idea of the unique self of a corporation add something to the conversation? You know, what's kind of your experience with it? Is that a fair question?
Well, I have some experience from. I did 1 year in a youth organization in Norway, where I'm from, and there definitely was some sort of unique self feeling to the whole organization. There was some sort of core. Yeah.
There definitely was, or definitely was not.
I think it was. Yes.
There was, and it was. Did that empower you? Did that kind of invite you to your own unique self?
Well, I have to be honest and say that it was an environmental organization, and they had a lot of activism in them, and I didn't feel that the organization met me. They didn't see me. They were very involved in their environmental fight, and I sort of fell out of that organization, but...
Yeah,
Mark, I'd just like to say that, you know, what he said there was really interesting. He said, they didn't see me, you know, which is one of the things that you talk about is that, you know, you form great relationships when you see the other person and the other person feels seen, which means that to the extent of seeing their unique. So I actually would love to hear from Mary Jane, because she's, if it's a Mary Jane, I think it is, we go back a long way. I wondered, Mary Jane, have you got anything to add to this conversation?
Well, this is Mary Jane. Thank you, Richard. And it's a pleasure to hear Mark and Richard talk, because having spent some time at the World Bank office with the door closed with Richard, and his conversation sometimes embarrassed me, because I thought liberating the corporate soul was kind of like coming out there with fur clothes on. And what I did appreciate is that I don't think it's a four-letter word. It's very much like love. And I agree with Eric, I believe, who was earlier saying that I think you know your audience. And I like the inner self. I do find that this dialogue that you two are having, and I don't know how many of us are listening to it, is so exciting, so thrilling. And it fits with, I think, the of encouraging and supporting, which I think all of us are, this evolution, which I think is happening rapidly now, and we have a lot to do.
Yeah, wonderful.
That's
really wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and the exercise
great.
was great. And I thought dividing up in groups, we probably didn't know we were connected yet. But anyway, when we did get to talk, it was very exciting.
No, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, Mary Jane. It's nice for me to meet you. So thank you very much. And, you know, a couple hundred people, you know, have come, you know, and signed up for the call, which is fantastic. And then it'll go out to, you know, at least another 25,000 people. So it's really a conversation that will find its way, which we're completely delighted by. And again, we're kind of just doing kind of a spontaneous call out and just kind of inviting people to feel, you know, share whatever their unique self-contribution is to the conversation. I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but just kind of spontaneously calling out. So can I invite you, Miriam, to kind of share any thoughts you might have about the unique self of a corporation? Right? Does it feel real to you? How does it resonate with you?
Hi. It's phenomenal. I'm in the midst of reading your book. I met you speaking with Dave Logan at one of our calls. And
great.
So I bought your book, and I'm really loving it. And I'm a management consultant. I've done a lot of M&As and all kinds of things. And the unique self was about most of my clients, how do we make the most amount of money and pay the least out? And I moved from that into more coaching and supporting organization in a different level of growth. But I still work with a bunch of financial people. How do you have someone who looks at money to see that there is other parts of it? Like truly, yeah.
Yeah.
Like my daughter works
yeah.
on Wall Street, and her friends, and I listen to their conversations, and I haven't put together how to really show this to them. So
yeah.
I'm really interested in this stuff, really, because I think that without this, there is no peace. And with no peace, there's just unhappy people.
Yeah,
like, how do you take this conversation into the Middle East?
Yeah, well, you know...
Richard, please.
Yeah, I'd just like to say a couple of things there. One is people who are focused on money, they are interested in investing in companies that make money and make more money. And all the evidence shows that companies that care about their employees, care about their customers, care about all of the stakeholders, actually most successful. And I've got a new book coming out in July of this year called The Value-Driven Organization, Unleashing Human Potential for Performance and Profit. And I'm making this link between unleashing human potential. And Mark helped me craft a few paragraphs there where I'm beginning to introduce a sense of unique self into my writing and into this particular book. But I've always thought that when people are interested in making more money, then showing them that caring about others is the way to make more money, it gets their interest piqued, and then they begin to dig deeper and begin to understand the principles. And once they understand the principles, then they can become promoters. In that book, I actually show financial returns for the 40 of the top of the best companies to work for. I show the financial returns for the firms of endearment. These are the conscious capitalist organizations. And over a 10-year period, there's a just absolutely it's absolutely convincing material that if you want to get a high returns, then these are the companies to invest in, and that's why I put that data in there. Just one word on the Middle East. Recently, and we'll be talking about this in our next conversation, we were invited to map the values of the United Arab Emirates, which is one of the most interesting countries in the Gulf. And actually, we found that it was one of the best results of the 26 nations that we measured, with, just to use my language, no potentially limiting values in the top 10, a level of cultural entropy at 12%. The only one lower than that we found was Bhutan with 4%. Most of the European nations are in the 30, 40, or 50%. And cultural entropy is a degree of dysfunction in the system. And so here we have a nation, the United Arab Emirates, which has got caring, absolutely caring leaders. And we've been out there now two or three times, and we have the invitation from them to help them build a values-driven nation. And what is so interesting to me is that in many, many respects, they're living democratic values, although they're not a democracy. And interestingly, the values assessment showed that whether you were an Emirati, one of the local people, or whether you were one of the foreign or guest workers, they all viewed the culture the same way in this really positive light. And so my only point is beware of labeling things when there's actually things going on in the Middle East which are quite amazing, in my opinion, and I'm so interested by this development. And what I'm just saying now, I think, is a great introduction to the next seminar we'll have in a month from now.
Yeah, no, Richard, thank you very, very much. And Miriam, thank you for this. Lovely to meet you. It was actually a great call with Dave Logan, and it was it's great that you're reading the book, and I appreciate that. And it just Richard's work and my work, and Dave will have a voice here as well, of course, right? It really are different pieces of an overarching picture. And one of the things we need to move towards now is, what they call systems intelligence, meaning that actually different unique selves actually come together, and create a larger whole. So I'm utterly delighted to kind of be exposed to Richard's work, and we're actually moving towards integration, moving towards an integration of these bodies of work to actually produce something that's larger than both, and that points us in an exciting new direction. I would just say one thing to maybe conclude. I think what Richard just said in the beginning of, before he got to the Middle East, which is the subject of the next call, right, is actually critical. In other words, these poetics that we're talking about are based on these deep structures of how uniqueness activates, both as an individual and a corporation, and how those two uniquenesses interface with each other, are not actually flights of fancy. They're deep structures of consciousness that then translate directly right in the balance sheets. And that's really important to understand. If I can just, as we close, with your permission, Richard, because I think we've got about a minute, left, and Richard will maybe give us a last remark. I'm going to introduce a Hebrew term, for the sake of elucidating a particular dimension. The Hebrew word for money is kesef. And kesef, K-E-S-E-F, kesef means yearning, yearning. Isn't that wonderful? The actual word for money is yearning, because there's a yearning for creativity. There's a yearning for unique self-emergence. And often we don't have a way to measure it. We don't know how to evaluate it. Right? We don't know how to access unique self. And so we use money, right, as a way of measuring, achievement, as a way of creating, and actually when you look at the history of measurement, a close friend, student, colleague of mine, Zach Stein, is actually finishing his doctorate on Harvard on the intellectual history of measurement. And measurement begins with a way to try and capture value, right, to understand value. And when we actually kind of deepen into that, but actually it's about fulfilling and responding to the deepest yearnings of individuals through voluntary exchange, which, as John Mackey points out, that is the core of business, then the game begins to change. When you actually address deepest yearnings, right, through the emergence of unique creativity and a person's sense of their irreducible uniqueness of being needed and addressing a unique need, it will always, you know, assume that you kind of do everything, you know, appropriately in all the other quadrants. You know, you can't skip all the other steps, but it will completely change your balance sheet, you know, in a profound way. And Wall Street, of course, is driven by people trying to evaluate, you know, different companies and understand how to actually track trends. And if one would introduce this evaluation of, is a company purpose-driven, right? Is a company animated by a unique sense of purpose? I would, you know, let's finish with a financial wager, right, of a gentle and lovely and delightful, you know, and impish kind. I would wager that the best analysts on Wall Street would dramatically improve their performance because they would take that interior into account, right, which would actually affect their ability, right, to plot and to give, you know, good portfolio advice at Goldman and Sachs, which, by the way, Goldman and Sachs could use these days because their record's not doing too well. So this has real bottom line, you know, effect, you know, in a very dramatic way, as Richard pointed out. And I think sharing that with your daughter is an awesome idea, and really inviting that millennial generation to something which they really want to stand for. Millennials today really want to merge purpose, right, and, you know, external achievement, and they need models to do so, and we need their creativity, right, to emerge this all. So, Richard, maybe you'll give us a thank you very much, Miriam, and thank you. We just were able to call on a few people, but thank you to everyone, to the couple hundred people who signed up, and to Jessica and Hannah for putting it together, for Leslie for facilitating it, and to everyone who's participating, you know, in the conversation. Richard, thank you, and maybe give us a kind of concluding thought before we go offline. Is that okay?
That would be okay. I just want to echo those thanks. And just to finish up that little piece of the conversation, I think you know, the level of employee engagement is a proxy measure for the sense in which the unique self of an organization has been activated and has attracted the unique self of the employees. Because you're not going to get engaged with a company and go the extra mile and put your intellect forward and your innovation and creativity if you don't resonate and if you don't feel that the company is making a difference. And that, I think, it's a great indicator, and it's a well-known indicator that and I think, Mark, that's a pathway we should follow as we begin to explore at a deeper level how to make the unique self of the organization a topic of discussion and give it some credibility. I think through the axis of employee engagement, and even perhaps, you know, reducing the thing that we measure, which is cultural entropy, this is a pathway into this discussion that just arose. So again, thank you, everybody. And Mark, I just love having these chats with you, you know, from the simple yokeman to this really
sophisticated
being over there. I give you my thanks.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Richard.
You're awesome. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you both, and thank you, everyone, for your participation today. You'll be receiving an email after this webinar with a feedback survey, and we'd love to hear your feedback about this call. Additionally, we'd love to see you at the next and final call in this series, which is on June 15th at the same time, and that one's called The Unique Self and Societal Development, The Path of Societal Transformation. And since you've already registered for this call, you'll automatically receive the email with the call-in details for the June 15th call. So thank you, everyone, for today. And if you would like to continue talking with the person you were paired in, we'll hold the line open after the call, and you can stay in your pair as long as you'd like. Feel free to stay on the line and continue the conversation. But thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Bye.